Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. There is desperation and confusion in the air. Trump has failed to end the conflict in Ukraine. He says he's unhappy with Russia about this. Well, feelings have nothing to do with a clear strategy. Also, the Russiagate saga is finally being revealed as a hoax. Will anyone be held accountable? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with Mark. I have to express my desperation and confusion in watching the Trump administration and the Europeans in tow, of course. I just don't know what there is to analyze anymore. We get a lot of emotion. We get a lot of, frankly, fake news about the conflict. And I want to also delve into, Seymour Hersh came out with an interesting piece. He's not always right, but he's usually over the target. There's much going on in Kyiv. So, Mark, maybe you can dispel my desperation and confusion. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, the last week started out with Donald Trump publicly, you know, announcing his frustration and disappointment with Putin that they haven't managed to come to a deal. Trump imagined that they would have already had a deal 2 months ago. I don't know why, to end the conflict on American terms, which is nonsensical because, first of all, the United States is not a neutral third-party arbiter here. They're a party to this conflict, and they are on the losing side of this conflict. Donald Trump expressed that, you know, he would have a very nice conversation with Vladimir Putin, whom is unfailingly diplomatic and polite as a rule. But then Putin would go on to bomb Kyiv in the evening, i.e. continue the war. And why did he think it would be otherwise? Because Russia has clearly laid out their terms, both for a ceasefire and for a diplomatic end to the conflict on terms that would meet the goals of the special military operation for more than a year, ad nauseum. And Trump managed to fool himself into thinking that with his narcissism and ego, I'm sorry, his charisma and magnetism, that he would somehow be able to nudge the Russian president from their position in defense of Russia's national interests. That hasn't been the case. So he reaches in his quiver to punish Putin, to punish Russia, and follows the same failed path that the Biden administration did. He reaches for more weapons and for more sanctions, and he finds that the American quiver is empty because Joe Biden has already fired every arrow left. So all threats of weapons now being paid for by Europeans, which are balking at the idea already, that they don't have because the Pentagon already announced a week ago that their stocks are empty, and trying to tariff the rest of the world to force them to stop trading with Russia. These are not credible or feasible leverage. This is bluff and bluster and desperation, and Trump has no arrows left in his quiver.
Yeah, George, it's kind of childish tantrums and, you know, and then these empty ultimatums all of the time. Also, as Mark pointed out, you know, basically threatening the rest of the world, the global trade system, because Trump can't get his way. You know, his, as Mark put it, his charisma. You know, Trump thinks he's being very magnanimous. And also, very curious after the announcement, this kind of convoluted, we'll sell weapons to the Europeans. They can give it to the Ukrainians if they want. Apparently, George, NATO members weren't aware of this when the announcement was made. I mean, like I said, please start dispelling my confusion and desperation about this. Where is the strategy?
Well, that's the remarkable thing, Peter, that there doesn't seem to be any kind of a strategy where, at least in the early days of the Trump administration, it did seem that he was now determined to end this war. And the only way that he could do it would be to tell Ukraine, look, the jig is up. There's no point in this fight. It's not in our American interest to continue with this fight. It's certainly not in your interest to continue with this fight. So we have to bring it to an end. And that, at least in the early days, remember that the United Nations, when they the United States refused to go along with the Europeans and issue a resolution condemning Russia, that seemed to be where he was going. And then he kind of went all over the place. So now there have been something about, I don't know, six telephone conversations between Trump and Putin. And there's in not one of those conversations is there any indication that they were close to a deal. And what Trump was saying when Marco Rutte was there in the Oval Office was, four times we were close to a deal. Well, you know, we can go through the readouts on the Russian side. We can actually even go from the readouts from Trump. Trump would send out these truths after each of these phone conversations. There's no indication that they're close to a deal. And then, you know, if one goes back to the Istanbul talks, well, Russia presented a plan. I mean, and in fact, you know, it was the way it was. Russia presented its very detailed negotiating position. Ukraine also presented its detailed negotiating position. That could have been the moment to say, well, okay, well, let's just see where we can go with this. But instead, he has basically spurned that, you know, those proposals. And now he's, you know, as much as the Biden administration had spurned Russia's proposals in December 2021, well, we're not even going to bother talking about it. So now he's stuck in exactly the same place as Biden has been and NATO has been, which is, well, we're going to keep this fight going because, well, because then Putin's going to come to the negotiating table. That's 3.5 years, and it hasn't happened. So why would he think that this would happen? And this is exactly the opposite of what Trump had campaigned on. Now, that's the remarkable thing. At least during the campaign, he seemed to realize that this strategy wasn't working. But now he seems to have just embraced this foolish NATO idea. Oh, well, you know, one more missile lobbed, and Putin's going to come crying to the negotiating table.
Yeah, and how many patriots, how do you define a patriot, a missile, a battery? Again, that's still not resolved, as far as I know. It's still not resolved. Mark, in whose interest is it to have this conflict continue? Because, you know, I can understand the Kiev regime. The jig is going to be up eventually, but it's not over yet. More weapons will come in. The Europeans will continue funding it. I mean, is that the motivation to keep this going?
Okay, for Zelensky and Yermak, right, it's power. As long as the conflict continues, they stay in power. For the Banderite fascists, the West Ukrainian nationalists that comprise the vanguard of the regime and the Kiev regime's military forces, it's in their interests because, you know, if this conflict ends, they end, right? Essentially, they can't surrender. The European elites, they can't imagine a reality where they lose to Russia and have to renegotiate security architecture of Europe. Also, they have incredible amount of political capital invested in this conflict. They can't even conceive of an end to it. So they continue. The U.S. deep state, the intelligence organs, the neocon hawks of both parties across the administration, they have an incredible amount of invested in this conflict. And the U.S., to be fair, isn't really suffering a lot as a result of this conflict. They believe they're weakening Russia. They're not. They're actually strengthening Russia. They have no belief in a sunk cost fallacy, and they believe that they can, some miraculous black swan event will eventually turn things around. And to be fair, that is what happened in Syria. After Russia won on the battlefield, they lost the peace. So they plan on stretching this conflict out for years until something might change in Russia, in Europe, somewhere else. So there's a lot of people that have a lot invested in this conflict continuing for a very long time.
You know, George, but you know, Trump is facing a lot of challenges, and I'm being very generous right now. But that was one of his core issues when he ran for his second term, what would become his second term. And there's an enormous amount of disillusionment. Other issues are in play as well. But this is is Trump's thinking kind of transmigrated into thinking of Russia like Iran? I mean, one spectacular thing, you know, I'm not saying that he's going to order the bombing of Russia, but he wants some kind of spectacular news-changing event here. Because I think, as you said in your first answer, in Trump's mind, well, they met in Istanbul. What's the problem? And I think that's how he looked at it, George.
I think that may well be what he's thinking of, that he, Trump, is so dynamic, is so erratic, is so frightening and menacing a figure.
And apparently, George, he's a genius as well.
And he's a stable genius. That if he does something really spectacular, then that will somehow change the equation, because it's in a way he is thinking about Iran. Hey, I did something no one else has done. No American president has dared to bomb Iran. I did it. You know, Obama said, oh, we can't possibly do it. No, that's too risky. I did it. So therefore he thinks, well, I can do the same thing with Russia, and Russia does not want to get into a war with us. That's why I think that those conversations that he had with Zelensky, when he asked, well, do you have anything with which you can reach Moscow or St. Petersburg? And Zelensky said, well, give us something, and boy, we're going to reach Moscow and St. Petersburg. And the White House said, well, he was just simply asking a question. And then he himself said in a very perfunctory way, well, I don't think they should hit Moscow. None of those denials were particularly convincing. And so that may yet happen, that he's going to do something, or at least Ukraine's going to, you know, do something spectacular in Moscow. He'll have the plausible deniability. Well, I did tell him not to do it. I mean, it's, well, you know, I asked him, I told him not to do it. But I think it could happen. And I think that's kind of his mentality, that he's sort of thinking that he's going to do some spectacular thing, make Russia really pay a price for this, and then they're going to come to the negotiating table. I mean, I agree with Mark, that ain't going to happen, but I think that may well be the way he's thinking.
Mark, what are your thoughts on that, looking for some spectacular moment?
Yeah, I've been actually been saying all everywhere that eventually the point will come when the U.S. is unable to accept Russia's terms for ending this conflict, and Russia is not going to make any concessions to the United States, that Putin would say no, and then everyone would be whispering in Trump's ears, if you want to de-escalate, if you want peace, you have to escalate to de-escalate. And that is the headline of David Ignatius's piece in the Washington Post this week. Again, unfortunately, the U.S. doesn't have much room to escalate out of this conflict. This is not the 1990s. This is not the unipolar moment. And
I have to jump in. We have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Remind you, we're discussing some real news. George, let's change gears, a topic you and I have covered, I don't know how many thousands of hours. It's Russia, better known as Russiagate. A lot of big announcements coming out of the administration. Tulsi Gabbard is back in the news, I suppose, in the eyes of the MAGA movement in a positive way. When Trump was in office the first time, he threatened to release all kinds of documents. He never did it, okay? And now he's back in the White House, and now we have, it looks like, again, maybe it's a lot of hype here, but Tulsi Gabbard and the group around her seemingly have pointing to Barack Obama as the very center of this hoax that was perpetrated against not only Donald Trump, but against the American people. And I want Mark's comment later, poisoned American foreign policy when it came to Russia. What are your thoughts, George? I mean, nothing that's come out over the last week or so is a surprise to me. I'm sure it's not a surprise to you.
It's not a surprise, other than it's there now in black and white, something that we had suspected all along, that Russiagate was instigated personally by Barack Obama. He instigated it in order to initially to prevent Trump from winning the election, and then to prevent Trump from governing, and in the hope that Trump would get impeached. It was directed, and they knew exactly that this was a hoax. They knew it was false. Their own intelligence people had told them that, well, there's no evidence of Russian interference. There's no evidence that the Russians prefer Trump to Hillary Clinton. In spite of that, Obama ordered all of his senior officials to come out with a very different story, the exact opposite of what the intelligence people had been telling him, with a view to destroy Trump. Now, the reason why I think it is quite a very significant event is that everything that we've got now with with Ukraine and everything and this war, it all stems from that, because this was the moment when there was a very drastic deterioration between the West and Russia, and it led, I think, to the events in Ukraine. So this event, and given also that Trump knows that Ukraine interfered three times in previous election, 2016, 2020, 2024, and Zelensky went, you know, was campaigning for the Democrats, effectively even in 2024. He's got an opening here to say, what the hell has Ukraine done for me? They've done nothing for me. If this whole thing has been cooked up by my political opponents, and they've used Ukraine essentially to push me into a war. They created this hoax essentially to push the United States into a war with Russia. This gives him an out. Now, I don't think that he'll necessarily take it.
He's certainly not taking it.
Gabbard, I think, does want this to be used as an out.
But he's not doing that, Mark. I mean, George's logic is impeccable. You know, three election cycles, we had Ukraine, Ukraine issue, and in 2016, they themselves foisted themselves onto the campaign through their embassy in Washington, D.C., And then, you know, all of the Hunter Biden story, in which the Trump administration tried to hunt down, which was seen to be inappropriate. But I mean, it is poisoned relations between the United States and Russia. So George is right. I mean, then shut this thing down. But he won't do it. Okay, how do you deal with that tension there, Mark?
Okay, so let me just say that, I mean, they're not, first of all, Tulsi's not telling us anything that we didn't know and haven't been saying for years. It's very good that she says that they have the evidence. However, all of that is nothing unless it's legally actionable to hold people accountable in the United States. Until then, it means nothing. We'll have to see on that going forward. But I think bigger picture, the heart of this is that the power of the deep state, right? The permanent bureaucracy, the foreign policy elite, the blob, as Ben Rhodes called it, in the United States. And they're still driving Trump all around the, you know, his golf course, right? You know, they're telling him what to do. They're in charge right now of Trump foreign policy, and he doesn't seem able to escape them. Tulsi Gabbard spoke a week ago about how powerful and prevalent they still are. Maybe this will be a weapon that can, you know, unseat their grip a bit. Maybe not. We'll have to see. But you're not allowed to change U.S. foreign policy. There is a U.S. foreign policy orthodoxy, right? Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, those are the enemies. The Israel, United Kingdom, those are the allies. Democracy doesn't come into play with it, because this is enshrined in the U.S. political system via the blob, via the deep state. John Bolton bragged openly about how he manipulated Trump so that the relations didn't improve with North Korea. This was used to start a war with Russia, the other nuclear superpower, to bring the two nuclear superpowers in the world to the brink of nuclear confrontation. This is madness. There should be some accountability for this. But as of yet, they're still in charge of the situation and driving Trump back to the edge of global conflict.
You know, in Georgia, you can have James Comey and John Brennan. Yeah, you could put their feet to the fire. But I would argue, and I think Mark would agree with me, that's not going to change policy. Two people are going to be held accountable. And, of course, it plays well with Trump's base. It's one of the things that he ran on. And sure, you could take these perjury charges, all obstruction, all of this. But I would argue that it really won't significantly change anything. I mean, because this is a mindset. I mean, I've often used the analogy, it's a beehive. Everybody, the worker bees, and then you have the, you know, higher echelon. They all know what they're supposed to do. You don't have to check with each other. You just understand it. So take out Comey, take out Brennan, which I wouldn't shed a tear over. But they're representative of a mindset that you cannot extract from the American foreign policy establishment.
So I agree, and it's quite remarkable that when he's out of power, he kind of realizes this. And just as before the 2016 election, he was talking about improving relations with Russia, and then once he's in power, nothing happens. And in fact, he just adds more and more sanctions, even though he had to have known, even during his first term, that he had been manipulated by Barack Obama, who on his way out the door imposed all those sanctions on Russia and expelled all those diplomats. He knew that he had been manipulated by Obama. But now he has it in black and white. There it is. There are the meetings in which Barack Obama basically ignores all of the intelligence findings and instructs all of his senior officials to leak falsehoods to the media, which they did within minutes of this meeting with Obama, to say, we have clear evidence that Vladimir Putin himself personally interfered in this.
Personally.
Yeah, personally.
Personally, yes. They said that over and over again. Personally.
Personally, in order to secure the election for Donald Trump. He has this now. He knows that he has been pushed into this war. He knows that this is a very dangerous business, and yet he seems unable to get off. I mean, he's unable to shift anything. He cares about what Lindsey Graham thinks. You know, Lindsey Graham, you know, who hated him, who hated him in the 2016 campaign. During his first term, he, Lindsey Graham, sponsored legislation to prevent Trump from firing the special counsel. So, and now he sits listening to Lindsey Graham and said, we need to follow this policy of this 500% sanction, which is 500% tariffs, which incidentally Trump has not yet disowned. He still says, well, maybe we'll do 500%. So, you're absolutely right. It's quite remarkable that even with all this in front of his eyes, he seems unable to alter policy.
You know, Mark, what's being released so far is we all knew it. There was nothing surprising whatsoever. What was surprising is that now, maybe timing is important here in light of the controversy over the so-called Epstein files. But, you know, to both of you and to our audience, I suppose what bothers me most is that there are countries in the world that are heavily foreign countries involved in American politics, particularly the country of Israel. But there is no commentary on that. I mean, we have a hoax that made up out of whole cloth, okay? Changed the course of European security, even global security. And then you have another country where there's mountains of evidence of influencing American foreign policy, for sure, even domestic policy, like dealing with Israel as far as like boycotts and freedom of speech. But Mark, that is never brought up. Well, every once in a while it is, but it's not mainstream, Mark.
Yeah, this is hardwired. It is baked into the U.S. political regime and acted out through the blob, the deep state. There are certain countries that are not only allowed but encouraged to influence because their security states are interlinked with our security states to control each other's political figureheads, right? The United Kingdom, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and now the Kiev regime in Ukraine. They're allowed to influence U.S. politics. They're encouraged to influence U.S. politics. That's what K Street is all about, right? You know, the lobby, that is another huge center of power in Washington that is often not acknowledged. And just like there are certain countries that are allowed to interfere and drive U.S. politics, there are certain countries that are always the enemy, right? Eurasia has always been the enemy, right? And of course, you know, the new axis of evil, right, is Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea, Syria having been
taken. And maybe throw in BRICS now, you know, whatever.
Oh, BRICS, why not? At least that's a bugaboo for Trump. Although, I mean, to be fair, I think he seems to at least intuit that just not coming up with an alternative to the dollar, but simply trying to bypass the dollar with each other's currencies, he realizes what a threat to U.S. global hegemony that really is. So I'll give him points for recognizing just what he's doing to try and stop it is exactly encouraging them to further divest themselves from using the dollars in trade with each other.
Well, and also, George, when we finish this up, his embrace of Bitcoin. Again, it's very counterintuitive to a dollar hegemony. I don't get it. Some people tell me he has a personal vested interest in Bitcoin. Last 20 seconds go to you, George.
That's right. He is, absolutely. But just following up on what Mark said about certain countries are allowed to do certain things and there's no accountability. Here we have with Israel, which just murders American citizens, so much so that the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, as fervent a Zionist as there is anywhere in the world, even for him, this is too much. Even for he starts getting angry and condemning Israel. But it's not going to make any difference. We know that just because Mike Huckabee is enraged and visited the West Bank and spoke to Christians there, it isn't going to make any difference. Tomorrow, Mike Huckabee will be spouting the same stuff on Israel.
And meanwhile, people are going to have their hair burning on fire over the Epstein files. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.